welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. So this week we're on kind of a spring cleaning theme, which it might feel a little early for that since it's still February, technically, but it's never too early to get a head start, right? And so what we're going to talk about this episode is how you can clean up and repurpose and reoptimize old and underperforming content and start getting value out of it again. You know, maybe you've got a website and you've had a content marketing strategy in place for a while, but you've got a lot of old content that either doesn't fit or isn't getting you the results that you want, or it's just out of date and you're not sure what to do with it. Well, we're going to walk you through the process of how you can look at that content and figure out whether to convert it into something new or sometimes just get rid of it. And we're also going to talk about some of the impressive results you can get from going through that process, especially in terms of SEO. So we've got our content director, Dave Vandewaat, joining us for this discussion. And it's a pretty long and in-depth episode. I thought about breaking this episode into two parts, which we've done in the past. But going forward, I'm going to try to do less of that just because I think it's a little less friendly for people who are new to the podcast to come in and see, you know, part one or part two. And so rather than do that, we're just going to jump into the episode and start getting into the content. Just a quick reminder before we get started, if you're not already familiar with LaFleur, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to deliver data-driven solutions that grow their businesses. To learn more about us, just check out our website at LaFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. All right, let's get started and learn how to make our old content new on this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. So on the podcast this week with us, we have Dave Vandewaat. If you've listened to the podcast before, then you probably know Dave because he's on here almost all the time.
I just put up a cot in the room here and sleep.
It's your main function is to come on the podcast.
Yeah, just be a guest.
Just be a great guest. So yeah, Dave is our content director. He's probably the most knowledgeable person at LaFleur when it comes to content marketing and all things content related. And so he's a great guest for this podcast because what we want to talk about this week is we're going to talk about how to go back and maybe revive and revisit and reoptimize content that you've published that you thought was going to be good, but for whatever reason, it didn't perform the way you wanted it to. And first of all, I just want to say that I think that we as writers can probably relate more than almost anyone else to why you would not want to do this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I know that like when I get done with a piece, even if it's good and even more so if it doesn't perform, I'm like done with it. I don't want to see it again. You know, I don't want to think about it again. I'm on to the next thing, you know,
just burn it.
Yeah. So I think your instinct is to be like, you know, why go back? You know, why just on to the next thing? So maybe let's just talk about, and I also want to talk to you on this podcast, Dave, because you've been actually doing some of this work recently for a couple of our clients, one in particular that I'm thinking of. So let's start and talk about why you actually would want to do this.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, on the technical side, it appears as though Google has a sort of like a quality score as part of their ranking factors for how they decide to rank your website in search. So essentially what that means is if you have a really great post that gets a lot of links to it and it's good content and it ranks well, then that increases the quality score. And maybe even, we're not 100% sure, but potentially like time on page and bounce rate and some of that factors into it. So that page is going to say, oh, this everyone likes this page. It's been shared a lot and everything else. And so it's going to increase your quality score. But if you have a lot of garbage posts that don't do well, that don't get very many page views, that don't get very much time on page with high bounce rates, then that's going to reduce your quality score. And what Google might be doing is giving you the benefit of the doubt when you post a new blog post or a new piece of content on your website and says, oh, the average quality score is pretty high. Let's go ahead and just give this one the average and bump that up. Now that it's a brand new piece of content, it hasn't performed yet, but we're going to give it the benefit of the doubt because all the rest of their content is quality. And the same for bad content. Like if you've been putting out bad content, Google might go, this is probably just more bad content. We're not going to worry about it.
Right. So your batting average kind of matters. You know, your history and track record affects not only like, you know, readers' perception of your blog, but actually how Google looks at your blog.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's the sort of technical side of things. The other really good reason is that you want to have people enjoy your blog and your website.
That too. And just the other reason that I can think of is that, you know, even though your instinct might be to just move on to the next thing, you know, some content, especially if you think it's high quality and you're pretty sure that you wrote something engaging and you thought it was going to resonate, you've already got a lot of work into it. You know, if you can do some simple things and maybe kind of bring it back and give it another life, I mean, that's some of the highest return on investment you could get on your time. You know, maybe you put, you know, half an hour into it and suddenly you've got a great piece of content that would have taken, you know, 3 hours to write from scratch and publish and things like that.
Yeah. And the one extreme of that is just tweaking some of the metadata, you know, like your title tag, and that takes 15 minutes and maybe it explodes and goes up higher in search because you just didn't have all your metadata there. And then the other extreme might be that you're revising and rewriting a piece, but even that's only going to take you a fraction of the time it would take to write something brand new from scratch.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to talk about, just for fun and kind of to get us in the mindset to do this and motivate us to do this, I wanted to talk about, you know, when you publish a piece of content and you really think it's going to do well, you're really kind of proud of it, and it doesn't perform, it's kind of a feel bad, right? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a bummer. And so, but you know, sometimes the fact is that not every piece of content just resonates, especially the first time around, no matter how great it is. And I was thinking, as I was kind of brainstorming from this this podcast episode, just kind of some examples of history, from history, that is, of content that came out and underperformed. And I'm thinking of things like the works of Bach, who was not known in his lifetime and only was appreciated later when someone, you know, found the work and generated interest in it. Also, like all of Impressionist painting, like
right,
that entire school of painting, which, you know, now we consider like the greatest works in Western history, like Van Gogh, totally unknown and overlooked, you know, during the lifetimes of those artists. And one of my favorite examples that I came across, and I actually didn't know this. I don't remember how I stumbled across this recently. But one great example of reviving some underperforming content is The Wizard of Oz. Hmm. The Wizard of Oz, when it came out in 1939, and MGM, they spent about $3 million making it, which in 1939 dollars, that's a lot of money. It's a big budget movie. And it only made like $1.5 million. So they lost like half the budget. It was kind of a flop. They lost a ton of money on it. And so they basically, for about 10 years, it was, you know, and movies at that time too, where there was no TV and no video.
Right.
So once it was out of theaters, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. So the movie was a bit forgotten. And then they decided to re-release it in 1949. And that release made a ton more money and actually pushed the movie into the black. And there's a number of reasons why, you know, that second time around it did better. Number one, Judy Garland had gone on to be somewhat successful after the movie, and she was a higher profile star. So there was kind of a draw there. But also the second factor that at least most people have speculated is that World War II had ended. You know, during 1939, we're just entering the war. A lot of people are overseas. I mean, people have other things to focus on. So 1949, you know, the war is 4 years in the rear view now. People have a little more time for entertainment, a little more money to spend. And just kind of the themes of it, people think resonate with the post-war kind of environments. But it was just a more conducive time for a successful movie. And then after that, they re-released the movie one more time in 1955, which was just about the time that television was becoming, you know, a fixture in households. And so that re-release got CBS to pick it up as like a television movie. And from that point on, you know, the television screenings were really successful. And from that point on, it became a staple. But none of that would have happened. I mean, this is a movie that everyone's seen. You know, it's like a cinematic
right,
classic, top, you know, probably AFI, top 10 movies of all time. And most likely no one would remember it if they had just gone with the initial release and then been like, well, that didn't work, you know, on to the next thing. So that's, you know, world-class content that just didn't click the first time around.
Moby Dick, another example.
I knew you'd have an example.
Yeah,
from
of course I do.
Some older example
obscure
literature.
Yeah, right.
I was waiting for it.
Yep.
So.
No, yeah, Moby Dick was just on the shelf in some library classified in the cetology section, which is like the study of whales. and someone found it and was like, hey, this is really good. And then it just took off in the early 1900s. And it just sat on an old dusty shelf for almost 50 years before that.
There you go. So if Herman Melville and Van Gogh and everybody who made The Wizard of Oz can flop the first time around, don't feel bad. It doesn't necessarily mean you've made bad content. So let's talk about another thing that I want to touch on is how do you go about and decide when a piece of content has underperformed? Because it depends, I think, on the focus of the piece. In particular, You know, I think it's important to set realistic timetables for a piece and give it some time, you know, to show up in search, especially if it's an evergreen content. You know, something by evergreen, you mean something that isn't really focused on like a, you know, a news event that just happened, something that's kind of a more timeless topic, you know. I think that, you know, if you wrote a story about a breaking news item, like a car wreck that just happened or something like that, or some other, you know, item in the news that had a legal implication, you know, most likely if you haven't seen any traction on that within a couple of weeks, it probably missed the mark because you're going for that immediate impact, right? But evergreen content, you know, it can take some time to rank. I mean, I think especially if you're, it's a blog post that's targeting, you know, more competitive search terms, which a lot of lawyers, a lot of stuff in the legal space, we would consider pretty competitive.
Those highly keywords. Competitive. Yeah.
And so you got to give it some time. I mean, it might be a month, it might be a couple months before you start seeing significant organic traffic from it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Ahrefs did a huge study on how long it takes for things to show up in, on the first page of Google, for example. And they looked at like 2 million random keywords and tested the age of the first 10 results. And for results 2 through 10, almost all of them were over 2 years old on
average.
Over
2 years, okay.
And then for the number one result, the average time was almost 3 years old.
Wow, okay.
So if you're looking at the first page of Google, it takes a while.
Yeah, I was not even necessarily thinking in that frame of time, although that makes sense. I mean, if you know, like you said, for evergreen topics, it can take a while. But I was came across on HubSpot, which is a marketing company that does a lot of really good marketing research. We reference them a lot in our blog posts and things that we write for the floor. They recently did a content study, and they found that 76% of the visits to their blog came from posts that were more than a month old. And 92% of the leads they got from blog posts came from posts that were at least a month old. So that's like most of the traction they get in their blog is from stuff that they wrote, you know, a couple months ago.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So what do you think for a legal blog, you know, an evergreen kind of topic, how long do you give something before you look and see maybe, okay, you know, this isn't getting the number of page views or the engagement metrics I want? Is it a few months maybe or six months, a year?
Yeah, I'd probably take a peek at it over the course of the first few months, maybe 3 or 4 months, and just see. Mm-hmm. If you got nothing, you know, you can check right afterwards and see if it's getting any traction. And if it's getting no traction, you might have a problem with the post of some kind. But I would wait 6 months if you're looking at actual performance data. Take a peek at it at 6 months and see, okay, is this kind of in line with what we expect or not? And especially for evergreen content, come check back in a year and see if it's improving or if it's stagnant or if it's getting worse than that 6 month mark.
Gotcha. Okay. So we kind of established a timeline here. So you're maybe going to go back and look at your blog posts that are, you know, more than 6 months old and look for stuff that, you know, you think has merit, but just isn't, you know, performing the way you want it to. So what are some of the criteria? I mean, I kind of have some ideas here, but you've actually, you know, done this even more recently than I have. So what are some of the criteria you might look at and decide what blog content is worthwhile, worth investing more time into?
Yeah, so what we do, what I've been doing for one of these projects is I just pull the lifetime data for all of the client's blog posts, and I look at and arrange it in Excel. It's a little easier to handle in Excel, and I also love Excel. What I do is I look at a couple of important metrics, not just page views, because page views are great, but they don't really tell you a whole lot about engagement.
Definitely.
So looking at time on page and seeing, okay, are people spending time here, like more than 30 seconds or 15 seconds on a page? And then also looking at bounce rate, which tells you if the bounce rate's really high, people are just leaving that page and not doing anything else on your site. If the bounce rate is low, that means they're moving around on your site from that page to and from that page. So if those things, I look at those things first and then kind of use page views as like a tiebreaker criteria to see, okay, this is lower than average. So I take a full average of all of them. Is this lower than average? Which ones are lower than average in all three of those criteria? And then which ones of those are like the worst of the worst?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make a decision at that point about whether you want to just get rid of it because maybe it's old and outdated or something like that.
And maybe it's hurting your quality score like
exactly,
you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. Yeah, just get rid of it. Or if it's worth maybe revisiting, like you said, to increase the ROI, like spend 30 minutes on it. If you think you can really spruce it up and make it look nice and make it better
mm-hmm.
and a more quality read, then that's going to be a really good investment.
Right. And, you know, you could probably use the data a little bit. I would think you might, you know, correct me on this if this is wrong, but if you see maybe a page that has good time on page and good engagement metrics, but not really getting a lot of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a sign that, you know, people who do manage to get there are engaging with the content, but you just need to get it to more people. That's something mm-hmm. I might look for.
Definitely.
Other than that, you could kind of use a little bit of your own, you know, a gut call, a judgment. I think two factors that I thought of that I would look for are either it's, you know, just it's what you call high, what you think is high quality, relevant content. You thought it would be interesting to your audience, and the blog is, itself you think is well written, and it's just for kind of intangible factors isn't performing as well as you wanted. We've definitely all had those on client blogs. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no shame in admitting that. It's, you know, no one has a perfect batting average. Or the other thing I might think of is you look at a blog topic and you're like, man, that was a good idea, but it just didn't quite execute it well. Maybe you didn't have the time to write it the way you wanted to, or, you know, something else about it. But you look at, you can think, see another way of going about it, you know?
Definitely.
I would think too that, you know, we talked about evergreen content, and I think mainly that is the content you'd more want to focus on. Like we said, the articles that you write about, you know, like a breaking news story, just like a quick write-up on something like that, if that doesn't perform, it's probably not worth it. You probably don't have a lot of time into it, and it's probably not worth trying to salvage it, basically, right?
Yeah, we've spoken before about the different types of content, and just that timely stuff is really just not worth the investment. You're going to get a huge bunch of hits, and then it just falls off to nothing. Mm-hmm. The evergreen content is like it's a slow burn sometimes. Sometimes it's a quick burn, and it blows up, and then it does really well. But other times, it's a slow burn where you get more and more and more and more views over time. And like we said, if it takes 3 years to get to, you know, the first, or 2 years to get to on the first page of Google, it makes sense that you'd want to kind of wait on that stuff and let it ride for a little while before you make any decisions about it.
Right. And also when we talk about timely content, I think it's important to distinguish that, you know, it's not a bad thing to tie your content into what's going on in terms of the news and current events and conversations that people are having right now. I think what we're most talking about that is very front-loaded in terms of its impact is stuff that's just like, you know, you see a lot of attorneys that do like write-ups of car wrecks that just happened. Mm-hmm. There's not really a lot of like additional insight. It's just like a wreck happened in this time, this place, you know. That stuff, there's just not a lot of value there if it doesn't perform right away. But absolutely, I think if you see it, especially, you know, like an evergreen topic, like let's say you had something like, you know, about certain types of auto part recalls or something like that, and then a recall just happens that's a big, like, you know, the Takata airbags that were in the news for quite a while. I think that's, you know, a great way. You might be able to rewrite that piece such that you talk about that issue, the Takata airbags, but then segue or use it as a case study for how that kind of law works in general, you know? So you've got something that has an evergreen nature. It's just got to tie into something that's going on now.
Right.
So that can give you kind of the best of both worlds, basically, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, I like to use those topical topics as a sort of a springboard into a bigger issue. Where you kind of, like, the Takata airbags is a great example. Mm-hmm. Like, that was one specific defect that affected a lot of people, but there are a lot of other product defects, and you could talk more about that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then if someone comes across it later, it's since you've used it as a case study, they're not necessarily going to see that and be like, oh, this isn't relevant now, you know? I read tons of old content that, you know, came around at a certain time and is through the lens of a current event, but is interesting to me because it's kind of timeless. Mm-hmm. But definitely not every blog article is a winner, and not every blog article is worth coming back to. I would say in particular, so we touched on, you know, those kind of like quick one shot, you know, here's a car wreck that happened or a famous divorce case or a state law. Like all sorts of legal blogs, I'll see they'll just quickly comment on something that happened in the news, but there's not a lot of analysis. That's probably not worth going over again. Especially, and this kind of content was kind of a whipping boy on this podcast, but any kind of like firm news and announcements, like overly promotional stuff, like, really, no one cares in the first place. They definitely don't care, like, you know, 6 months down the line or later. Also, too, we've talked about how to make your content kind of more engaging to the ordinary reader. If you're looking at topics that you came up with maybe early on when you were blogging and they were really kind of focused on an attorney audience, and that can be okay sometimes if you're really trying to look for referrals, but on a blog that's marketed to the general public, you know, if it's a topic that really, something really nitty-gritty with the law that only another attorney would be interested in, probably not worth revisiting again, right? I wouldn't say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Unless you can really apply it to someone who is your ideal client. And then kind of turn it down a few notches, dial back the legalese, like you said, and turn it into something that someone would really be able to read and chew on and enjoy.
Yeah, but if it's the kind of topic that might, you know, that bores people at like a legal seminar, you know, even boring other attorneys, like probably just best to move on. And finally, the other kind of deal breaker that I would say is you just don't like it. You know, it's a topic that you thought of, but you just don't really care about anymore. If you don't, probably other people, your readers won't either, you know? So I would say life's too short to go back to blog content that you really don't want to revisit. Yeah. You think it's not interesting anymore, just delete it or move on.
You're going to have a hard enough time getting motivated yourself to get to work on
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
I'd add to that things that are about people's media appearances. A lot of attorneys will do, we were in the news. I was in the news. Yep. And that's great. I think it's okay to do those, but you do want to periodically go back through and scrub. That's one of the things that I found working on this, working on one of our clients is that they had a bunch of different media appearances that were all related to one case.
Mm-hmm.
And they happened over the course of 3 or 4 years, and that case finally settled. It was like a 200 or 250 plaintiffs in that case. It was a big case.
Yeah.
And so what we did was we took all of that content and we combined it and we turned it into like a big success story. And then we removed all those old ones. But a lot of the old content, you know, we showed up in this news segment, and then you click to the news segment and it just didn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that you want to watch out for stuff like that. Outdated, anything that's outdated, like promoting events, like, hey, we're going to be at this place on, you know, in 2013. And then, you know, it's 2018
forever.
Now. And yeah, no one cares. So things like that. And also you want to kind of maybe keep an eye out for things that are about people who are no longer with your firm. It's easy to kind of forget about that over the course of time, but that might be something that you want to watch out for as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk, and you kind of hit on one method of, what you could do to some of these blog posts to bring them back, which is consolidating them. And we'll touch on that in a second. In general, so we've kind of talked about the criteria you might use to decide what content you want to target to reoptimize, revive, and republish. But in general, I think it's good to ask the question, why would it be different the second time around? You know, if it's good content, then it's probably worth an approach, but like, what are you going to do differently to give it new life? And so some of the things that I can think of, you can chime in whenever you feel, you know, you got something to add in here, Dave.
Sure.
But some ideas that I came up with, first of all, I would say if it's a shorter piece, think about fleshing it out. You know, a lot of marketing research these days and a lot of marketing opinions among digital marketers is kind of leaning toward the idea that we're kind of in this renaissance for long form content, in-depth content, right? So there's this kind of older content marketing strategy of publishing these 300, 400 word blog posts like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And most marketers today are considering that more of really an outdated practice. And there's a lot of research right now that shows that these longer, you know, in-depth pieces, even like 2,000, 3,000 words or more, actually get more traffic and they get more, especially more shares on social, you know? So if there's a piece that, you know, you kind of did it in a cursory way, you know, like 300, 400, 500, 600 words, but you look at the top and you're like, there's a lot more there, you know, consider fleshing it out into something longer in long form. And especially if you put the time into it, you can, you know, have some faith that people are, even if they don't read the whole thing, there's a lot of research to show that long form content can be really beneficial.
I would say one really good way to do that would be to look at, just Google the topic that your blog is about,
mm-hmm.
and see what the competitors are doing and find out where there's gaps in their discussions. You'll find that, of course, the most of the top results are long form content,
yep.
but you'll also find that even the long form pieces will miss important details and you can take a different angle than they do to really kind of monopolize on that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I can think of that would be a valid way of approaching old content is to just change up the format, you know, change up the medium. So you might turn a blog article into an infographic or into a video where you talk about the issue, kind of like we talk about frequently asked questions type video, but any kind of video content, you know, a short video where you walk someone through, you know, the legal details about a type of case that they might be, you know, interested in. There's a lot of potential there. So if you repurpose old blog content into video content, that's a high rate of success probably you'd have there. Also, you know, other smaller things like maybe just write a better headline. You know, mm-hmm. we did an earlier podcast. I'll plug it a little bit. It's one of our first episodes about how to write better headlines. And there's all sorts of resources you can find online from journalists, you know, and other people about how to write good headlines. But, you know, headline is it's what people are going to see in search, and it's pretty much going to affect whether they click through to your content or not. So even I would say, you know, like a really good piece of content, if it doesn't have a good headline, that could be enough to tank it straight away, I would say.
Totally agree. Mm-hmm.
Another thing, and we kind of touched on this earlier, is you can translate a timely article into an evergreen piece. You know, so let's say you wrote about Takata airbags, but just wrote about, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts of what was going on. Take that opportunity and maybe, and especially if, you know, Takata airbags are still in the news or a similar case that you could write about is still in the news, you know, take that opportunity to explore, you know, what that might mean for people's cases, you know, talk about some of the legal details and legal principles that might actually affect people, you know, so people who are looking for, you know, because if you just write about like what, you know, what the recall specifics are, people who are searching for things like, I was injured by a Takata airbag, they're not really going to come across that content, you know? Mm-hmm. But if it's, I was injured by a Takata airbag and you write about, you know, what do I do next? What kind of case do I have? How do I get help? Just adding that kind of evergreen dimension and that, you know, more informative content for your readers. That's a great way to take those quick hitting articles and turn them into something a little more productive long-term.
Mm, definitely.
And finally, like you touched on this, content consolidation is a great idea. So let's say, you know, the idea of consolidating your media appearances into a single piece of content is really good. And just in general, you know, do you have several underperforming blog posts that are kind of based around the same keywords or ideas? And try seeing if you can consolidate them into a single piece and delete the old posts. And you can also create redirects to the new ones, right? Mm-hmm. The new piece. So you can basically kind of merge those pieces together and make them more than the sum of their parts. Anyone who finds them in search will end up going to the new piece, and you kind of get all their powers combined.
Like you, do. Captain Planet, you do, yeah, definitely.
Or Voltron, that, sort of.
That is one really important thing to keep in mind when you're either deleting old content or repurposing it and consolidating it, is that you want to get your redirect structure put together on the back end of your website, mm-hmm, appropriately. So if you delete a post, don't just delete it, because you're going to miss out on any of the authority and ranking that piece has. So you want to set up a, it's called a 301 redirect. And basically, if someone lands on that page, it just moves them to a different one. So if they land on that old media appearance page where the video didn't play right and everything was wrong, you would redirect that to your big story. And mm-hmm, then if someone lands on that page for whatever reason, then it just pushes them right to the more relevant piece that's active and live.
Right. Yeah. I think the only thing is that you have to be careful that, you know, you're making sure that all of the content that you're aggregating into this new piece, making sure the new piece is relevant to anyone who would be looking for that, if, you know, who would have clicked through the old piece would actually be interested in the new one. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise that's just going to hurt your bounce rate, which is going to hurt your quality score. And so it's going to be counterproductive. So make sure that you're not duping people. I mean, if someone's going to click on it, the original link to the blog post and go to the new one and be like, what the hell is this? I didn't want this, you know, right. That's a bad sign. That's just going to hurt your new content as well. Mm-hmm. Another thing you can do in terms of kind of changing up the approach is to target just a more specific keyword. We talk sometimes in this podcast about long tail keywords and why they're important. And long tail keywords are just a lot more specific search keywords. So instead of, you know, the person who types in car accident into a search engine, and if you look at the traffic, you know, how many people type in car accident, it's a huge number, right?
Yeah.
But instead, you know, let's say the keyword is things to do after a car accident, that's a lot lower. Like the number of people who search for that is going to be much smaller, right? But the chance that you could actually rank for the more specific keyword is a lot better, because there's just so much content out there that's just going to rank for car accident. So general, mm-hmm, you know? So that's kind of the principle behind the idea of long tail keywords. And so I came up with, we have one client that we kind of always look at for various reasons. They do really well in organic search, and their content just seems to perform like gangbusters. And so I checked out some of their best performing pages in organic search and looked at the top keywords that were bringing people to those pages. And these are some great examples of long tail keywords. And also some of these keywords, I wrote a lot of this content. I didn't necessarily have some of these keywords in mind when I wrote them specifically, but if you just kind of focus your blog articles a little more to niche topics, the keywords kind of flow naturally. So these keywords, here's some good examples. Number one, is North Carolina a community property state? This client, by the way, is a personal injury and family law firm in North Carolina. Number two, same-sex marriage in North Carolina. Number three, how to get a divorce in NC without waiting a year. Number four, I love that one, right? That's really specific.
Yeah,
it's such a good one. It's weird, but it's the article. It makes sense if you read it, but it's only one part of the article. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what happens if you don't report a car accident? NC child support laws, non-custodial parents.
I like the ones that are not complete sentences.
I know.
Too. Those are great.
Well, people don't always think in complete sentences. That's,
I know.
If I looked at my
search history, I bet 80% of them are probably just like that.
Yep. Anyway, and number six, North Carolina marital property laws, inheritance. And seven, X won't pay child support. So those
no
are
apostrophe.
All, no apostrophe, yeah. And so those are all examples of good long tail keywords and that are going to give you, you know, they may not be as much search volume as someone searching for divorce in North Carolina or something like that. but your chances of ranking for them are a lot better. I mean, this blog we're talking about is just, it's an attorney blog. It's not like a powerhouse, huge firm that's spending a lot of money on their marketing, but they're ranking really highly for these keywords if you look, because they're very specific.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to what you were saying about consolidating content and really covering an issue in depth. When you write that long form content, those long tail keywords, none of us could have predicted those would be searches that people would do.
No.
And so what happens is those searches do naturally come up in the course of you writing more in-depth pieces about a topic. So if you just write your 300-word blog post about, you know, divorce in North Carolina, you're going to cover a couple of things, but you're going to miss out on a lot of the keywords you would rank for, especially those long-tail keywords that would come up naturally as you write more in-depth content.
Yep. And the one that you kind of hit on, the how to get a divorce in North Carolina without waiting a year, that's a good example. That's not what the title of the blog article is. The blog article is like 10 frequently asked questions about divorce in North Carolina. But one of the questions is, you know, how can I get a divorce without waiting or having lived here for a year? And so, like you said, it's just something that comes up naturally. But the piece itself is, it's a longer piece. You know, it's like probably 1,500 words or something like that.
Right.
And it covers a lot of topics in a fair amount of detail. And
a fun just, FAQs
yep.
piece.
And,
yeah.
Yep. And that piece ended up ranking, I think it's like number one Google result or close to for that search term. So
very cool.
Okay. So those are things I can think of in terms of just changing how you're thinking about the piece, or, you know, your approach to writing the piece. But there's other things too. Dave, do you want to maybe talk about some of the other things you can do more on the technical side, more in the structure of the piece that you can also do to make your content perform better?
Yeah, and this is something that we see very often, where the issue isn't the content, it's the technical details of the content, where maybe you haven't added images to your pages, maybe you haven't put headings in your post to give people previews of the major sections of the piece. You know, making sure you've got all the SEO elements in place. Make sure you have a descriptive title tag. Make sure you've got an H1. Make sure you've got H2s and H3s labeled in HTML like you're supposed to. Make sure you've got a meta description that invites readers to come and read your piece.
Meta description being that you set it in your SEO settings on your blog, and it's what people see in the search results page under the headline.
Yeah, exactly. And link building is a good example. I think link structure on your webpage is something that people overlook. If you've got a really good blog post that's doing really well and it relates to another blog post, go ahead and link to it. If you've got a practice area page that maybe you want to flesh out with, maybe you don't want to spend a ton of time talking about an issue on your practice area page, link back to a blog post that covers that issue much more in depth. So think about the ways that you can add links to your existing content, because you're going to be pushing more authority around on your own site that way. Those are some of the things that just pop in my head off the top of my head. CTAs, calls to action. So make sure that you, once you do have people on your blog and once a blog is performing well, you want people to take action from it. You don't just want it to be there as information. You want to really encourage people to contact your firm if they have a problem, or download a resource that you have that's available to people, or subscribe to your newsletter so they'll keep getting content from you. Add CTAs so that you can get the most out of the content that you have that is doing well.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And it's amazing when, you know, I read attorney blogs all the time. It's kind of part of my job. And a lot of them are bad, but I still, right. You know, I just survey them, see what the competition is doing. It's amazing how many blog articles just kind of trail off and don't end with a call to action. And I'm like, you do want this to be marketing content, right? You're writing it with some hope that someone would see it and want to contact you. And then you, at the end of the piece, you don't tell them that that's what you want them to do and exactly how they can do it. And that's what a call to action is, right? So don't forget that in the piece. You know, make sure when they get to the end of the piece, or through, also too, not even necessarily at the end of the piece, because not everyone's going to read to the end of the piece. But if they do, when you get to the end, you know, you don't want to have them sitting in, you know, the bottom of your blog article, but it kind of trails off and there's no contact info down there or anything they can see. That's just a lost opportunity right there, you know? So the top, make sure, you know, throughout your page, probably more at the top, you know, you've got stuff in your header that's going to have your contact info. But then make sure you end too with something, especially in a longer blog post that they're going to be, you know, scrolling down a ways. Make sure they've got something, you've got something in the bottom that tells them, you know, how they can get in touch with you and what you can do for them.
It's amazing to me, really, like you mentioned, how bad a lot of blogs are. And just, I think it's just poor writing. you know, even though there's a lot of these technical elements that people are worried about, like headings and pictures and videos and all that, like it still needs to be good writing. And good writing has a very logical internal structure. It inevitably moves from point A to point B to point C. So by the time someone gets to the bottom of your blog, it shouldn't be like, oh, and by the way, call us. It should be everything in that blog leading up to that conclusion is pushing towards that action that you want them to take. And you're going to see results from the good quality writing from that perspective, because it's still content that people are trying to read.
Yeah. And ideally it's not done in a way where you're constantly hitting the people over the head, you know, like we've all looked at those bad examples of that where it's like every sentence is like, when you contact an experienced Virginia accident attorney, and then like every other sentence, they're just, no one's going to read through that, you know, it's just more organically like building on the idea that, you know, if you need help in this area, like don't try to handle it yourself, you know, with lawyers, you know, we're here for a reason. Yeah,
this is what we do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then all that culminating in a strong call to action at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the other thing that I thought of is just, you know, goes back to social media, which is what part of, you know, where you want to promote this content. Obviously organic search is good, but you know, you shouldn't be promoting your content on your Facebook, your Twitter, your LinkedIn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So number one, you know, you want to make your content easy to share with those social sharing buttons that you see on blog posts. Those are there for a reason, you know. If people are interested, and if that's easy for them to share, they'll do it much more readily than they will to navigate over to Facebook, you know, copy and paste the link. Make it easy for them to share your content if they want to. And finally, you know, make sure that you are promoting your content on Facebook and Twitter, doing it aggressively, and also just at the right time. You know, that earlier Wizard of Oz example, that's kind of like a, you know, a grander scale of it, but that's a good example of a, you know, content that came out and just wasn't the right time when it came out. They didn't remake the movie or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just came out later at a more opportune time. So, you know, make sure when you're promoting the content that you republish, try to do it at the optimal times. And Dave, you've done some investigation into what are those optimal times to promote on social, right? You have a little more handle. When's good to, when do you really want to hit hardest in terms of promoting your legal blog content?
It's sort of like the evenings. So people get home from work, they sit down, they eat dinner, and then after that, they kind of vegetate on the couch and just think about your own habits. I mean, I'm on social media usually between like 7 and 9 o'clock at night because I'm just sitting on the couch, hanging out, poking around on my phone. It's the same thing everyone's doing. And so those are kind of good times, the evening to do it. Surprisingly, like the weekends aren't great because people are out doing things that they really enjoy and having fun, and they aren't really on social media as much. But weekday evenings are usually a pretty good bet that you'll get some better engagement.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, promote it a couple of times too.
I mean, definitely.
Don't just give it one shot and done, you know?
There's a ton of research on sharing the same post over and over again. You don't have to do it like every hour you post the same thing, but definitely post it the week after and say, hey, you guys really liked this last week. Share it with your friends today.
I know for sure in my Facebook feed, there's like certain posts, like sponsored posts that are from companies I've liked or things, and I will just see the same article for like a week in my feed. And eventually, sometimes they'll just wear me down and I'll just click on it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, well,
and I'm also not offended by seeing it multiple times.
I
just scroll past it. Oh, I saw that. I'm just going to keep scrolling.
Yeah. Sometimes I see it and I'm like vaguely interested in it, but there's other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't care enough about that. But then later I'm like bored. It's like later in the night. There's nothing on TV. And I'm looking through my Facebook feed. I'm like, it looks kind of good now. I'll come crawling back, I guess.
It's 4 a.m.
It's getting desperate. No one's posting anything.
This is interesting.
So yeah, don't give up on after one try. Okay, so those are some of the things, and you know, before we wrap up here, I just want to touch on a little bit. We kind of hit on that you had been doing this for a couple of our clients, and one in particular that I'm thinking of. And so I just want to maybe talk about that as a little bit of a case study, and for you to just kind of walk us through. So first of all, you know, it's not something we do a lot of for every client. Why in particular for this client did you guys decide that this would be the approach?
So this client has had a website for a really long time. They're very well established. It's a personal injury firm down in Texas. They're very mature in their business model. They've been around for like 9 or 10 years now. So they have a ton of website content. It's gone through several migrations onto different platforms. And so a lot of kind of churn at the firm as well over the course of a decade. And so we were looking at content going, you know, a lot of this hasn't been revisited in a long time. It's a little outdated. Some of these posts are really old, and some of it's not performing well. And we just weren't really getting results by creating new content to move them up in search the way that we really want it to.
Right.
So we thought, okay, let's take a look at quality and let's think about what can we do to improve the quality of the main core website pages. So we are rewriting all of their practice area pages and then making them more conversion focused. And then we're also rewriting two blog posts. Well, we're removing one blog post and we're rewriting one blog post every month for this client. So we look at their analytics data, like we talked about earlier, which posts have very low engagement, you know, low time on page, lower than average bounce or higher than average bounce rate, lower than average page views. And we say, okay, which of these do we want to just get rid of and redirect to something else? And which one of these is worth, you know, resuscitating? So that's kind of how we got started doing that.
Okay. And once you started going about it, I mean, I know it's probably tough to estimate kind of a big project, but I mean, how much work did it take? Was it more than you expected? Do you know how much time per piece maybe? I'm sure it's dependent, but
it's much less work than I expected, to be honest with you, which I was really happy about.
Yeah.
So the removals are very simple. You know, it's just a matter of having the analytics and our account manager, he's awesome. He pulls that data to report to our clients anyway. So he just shares that with me. And so looking at the analytics takes me maybe 15 minutes to pick out which posts are not doing well. And that sets me up for an entire quarter of content. So that's a very minimal amount of time to figure out what posts need to get removed.
Mm-hmm.
and resuscitated. Revising takes a lot less time, as we mentioned, than writing a brand new piece.
Definitely.
So revising a piece, developing it quite a bit further, even, you know, with more content, additional content, it does not take, it takes maybe 2 hours relative to the 3.5 hours it usually takes to write from scratch, research and write a brand new piece. So it was a lot less time investment. And then even implementing the redirects is a very simple process, taking down an old page and redirecting it to a new one.
Got it. And so from doing that, what kind of results do you have? Are there any particular pages that, you know, or blog posts that you managed to rewrite and you've actually seen increased traffic and traction? And how has the site kind of responded to the changes overall?
Well, I can tell you this. We only started this back in December, so we haven't been doing it for a long time. And the goal wasn't to get individual blog posts to rank better. The goal was to overall help the site rank better for specific keywords for their geography and their practice areas that they really want to target. Mm-hmm. So for one of their targeted keywords, like this is like a highly competitive keyword, they were on page 6 for, they were ranked 54th. In Google for this back in December.
Mm-hmm.
And since we've done this, they're now ranked 17th.
Wow, that's a big gain.
And this is like a very highly competitive area. It's a very high competitive, area both in search and in geography. And so we were super pleased. And that's just one keyword.
Especially because in search, I feel like position 54 to position 17, that might as well be like position like
10,000.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Yeah,
I mean, who goes through the 6 page of search? Never do.
When was the last time I went to the 6 page of Google? And I can't.
Maybe
if
you're researching like a dissertation, but otherwise, like no way, you know. But the second page, like
that's the second page of Google. Yeah.
The first page of Google is where, you know, the big money page. But I mean, second page, like that's people are actually going to see that piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and that's their homepage ranking better.
That's
which
stellar.
Is crazy, right? So again. And this is why we think quality score is a real factor for Google, because what's happening is that Google's looking at the whole site, the health of the whole site, and saying, okay, the quality of this is higher now. And so we're going to give all these pages a boost and give them the benefit of the doubt for all their pages. And so that's, I mean, yeah, the proof's in the pudding, I guess, however you want to say that. That we've seen really staggering improvements in just a few months, and it's awesome.
Now, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, we probably got to wrap up here, but hopefully we've given you some ideas about how you can kind of go through your content and, given you some inspiration to start doing that. And if you do, you may find that the rising tide lifts all boats. It can really mm-hmm. yield some great results, not just for that blog content, but for your website on the whole. All right, Dave, thanks so much for joining us. We always appreciate you having you here and sharing your expertise with us. And thanks. We'd love to see you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right. That's it for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. We hope you enjoyed the tips and that you're feeling motivated to start taking a look at that old content and seeing if you can't maybe spruce it up a bit and start getting some results from it. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. And don't forget to check back next month for another new episode. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.